Yeah, so when I lived in Dallas, me and Riley and a bunch of our friends pulled our money together because like all the DIY spots were closing in Dallas. So we like wanted to put something together that we could run ourselves. And we did, we found this building that used to be a Tejano Club. And then it
one of the easiest dogs. Like I've been in some houses where I'm like, oh no.
Oh really?
Like the dog's like almost killing me. No, but,
she can be chill. She can be a lot though, yeah. Sometimes. But yeah. So me, Riley, and a bunch of our friends were living in Dallas, and like all the DIY spots were closing. And we're like, fuck it, like, and all the ones that were around sucked because they would either have really weird policies that didn't really make sense, or they're in a bad location, which made it hard for kids to come to the shows.
Yeah.
So we found this warehouse, and it was a Tejano Club on one side, and then it was a Mexican restaurant on one part, and then it was a little bodega corner store in one part, all under one roof of a warehouse. It had gone out of business for like 10, 15 years. We found it. The landlord was just like some weirdo, and he just like let us rent it out. And we turned the Tejano Club into like the big room venue. It had like a stage already in it, and we like added some stuff and like built a wall. And then on the Mexican restaurant side, we built a bunch of rooms for ourselves, and we like lived. We're trying to live on the Mexican food restaurant side because it had a kitchen, it had a bathroom, it had a shower, it had a washer and dryer like in the back. So like we could make it livable, and then we were gonna build like a room for bands to stay in with like 9 bunks, so like a whole tour package could maybe just like sleep there. And we started working on it, and we spent a couple months working on it, and obviously it takes a lot of money, a lot of time. We're kind of building everything ourselves, so like
this was you, Riley, and...
Me, Riley, and, like, probably a group of, like, 10 other people.
10 of them.
If I had to really... Yeah. Because there was, like, our friend John was involved in it. Our friend Eric was heavily involved in it. There's, like, a bunch of other people that played big roles in either getting materials or donating time or money or effort or whatever the hell. And there was hella kids, like, helping us out in the scene, just, like, coming through with tools, giving us their time, like... There was, like, kids that knew construction that would come help us with, like, big projects for free, which is hella cool. But, like, we weren't even done building it, and, like, our friends from different places started hitting us up, like, hey, like, can we play? We're coming through. And why would you want to go play anywhere else? Like, come play our place, and we're going to pay you. We're going to give you most of the money. You know, like, it's like we're going to hook all our friends up. Like, it just come play our fucking spot. It might not be ready. So I want to say, like, one of the first... Like Zabalba came through on a tour with like Harness, and maybe it was Backtrack too, I think.
Uh-huh.
And we weren't even like we even moved in fully, and we had a show there, and it was kind of like dusty, and like there's like cables and stuff all loose everywhere. Like it was not ready for a couple hundred kids to show up, but we did it, and it was sick. And then there was a time where there was like a night where like Odd Future was playing a big show down the street.
Yeah.
And Trash Talk was pretty much following Odd Future on that tour and playing official after shows, but they were always like on some like punk shit. So like we did the official after show and had Trash Talk play it, and like a lot of these Odd Future guys just showed up at our like essentially a trap house like in the in South Dallas that's like very like run down. And like those guys showed up to the Trash Talk show to kick it. It was like I forget who played it. I think it was just there were two shows that night. Like Code Orange played the early show we had, which was not related to the Odd Future thing. It was
just like they just happened to play.
They just needed a show that day, and like our friend who was like John, who did all like a lot of the booking in North Texas, he was like, "Hey, like, I don't want to stick this at a venue that's going to take a big cut. Like, can we just do a early Code Orange kid show, the late Power Trip Trash Talk show, and let's like." Make it two separate things, or you could buy one ticket for both, like you get like a deal. And I was like, whatever. And it helped for sure. Like kids showed up early and paid money to watch Code too, so that was cool.
Sick.
And then that show like ends, and then it was like Power Trip, then Trash Talk, but like all these kids found out about the show from the Odd Future show. So like we were probably could fit maybe 500 to 700 people in there. There was like 1,000. Like, it was crazy. Like, the, you know, like, it was nuts. And then, if I remember, like, the what happened was, like, the Dallas Morning News was, like, covering the Odd Future show and then came to the Trash Talk show and, like, wrote about it. And then, like, after that weekend, like, the fire marshal showed up and was like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, I read, you know, this article about this crazy show or whatever, and they see, like, we have, like, built, like, a house on one side, have, like, two venues in here, like, nothing's up to code, nothing was up to fire marshal standards. Like, it was...
They closed it down after?
I mean, they gave us a chance to try to fix it up, and we were, like, all right, maybe we can do this. But then, like, some of just the stuff we needed to get contracted and done was going to cost a small fortune. And we were, like, the idea was to keep this spot open and work on projects to get everything up to code, make it official, whatever. But also, I think we weren't supposed to be living there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it was definitely... And it was, like, a rat's nest. Like, you know, like...
So you only have a rare couple of shows.
I want to say we had, like, maybe 10 shows there at most. Because I wasn't even there for all the shows. Like, I was living there, but either I'd be, like, working or out or on tour or something like that. But
that's so sick. Yeah. I mean, what could have been if, like...
It could have been crazy. Like, it was cool while it lasted. It was hella fun because we had the side for the shows. But also, like, we just... It'd be, like, a Friday night or something. And we just invite everybody. We'd be like, hey, tonight we're... It's a paint party. So everyone would come and help us paint or the walls or something. Yeah. Or, like, you know, we're taking out all this old wiring. So
and it's just hard work doing it for the
community. Yeah, but we'd just be partying too. Yeah. Like, that was a vibe in Dallas. Like, everyone was always hanging out and partying and just, like, it was a really cool scene. Like, the punks and the hardcore kids all hung out and, like, would party, go to each other's shows, and then go to the kickback afterwards. And, like, we had this spot where we're like, all right, we are the show and the kickback, you know? Like,
yeah.
But it was cool. Like, it was, like, homie shit. Like, it was, like, I had a, like, and kids would come through and be like, hey, like, heard you guys are working on this stuff. I got all the sheetrock in my garage from, like, a remodel project. And, like, they'd donate gear. And then we'd be like, all right, we're going to have we'll just on Friday, we're going to paint. And on Saturday, we're going to hang some drywall. And kids would just come through, bring weed, bring beer, and just, like, kick it with us and, like, help us work on stuff. And it came pretty far. It still had a long way to go. There was, like, the parking lot is a fucking mess of that. Like, there's huge craters. And, like, the city wanted us to start, like, fix the parking lot immediately, which that would have cost so much money because it was a big parking lot. Or, like, the surfaces and all that shit cost. I think we got quoted, like, $75,000 to resurface, like, the entire lot because that was a health code violation. These giant craters hold puddles. Puddles bring mosquitoes. So in Dallas... They were, like, hitting us for everything, bro. Right. They were like, that's a health code. That's a fire code over here. That's this. And we're trying to keep our head above water. But, yeah, it went under.
That's still so sick the Trash Talk, Power Trip.
We weren't even, like, the rooms weren't even fully built. Like, it was very much primitive the way, like, it was coming along. But we were still, like, making it happen. It was cool. But it was a bummer the city moved in on us like that. Yeah, it hurt.
You're listening to Laugh Not Die Later. Welcome. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Today, I have a very special guest, Sherwin. I apologize, what's your last name?
Shapoori.
Sherman Shapoori. That's a brand name of itself.
Thank you.
But, I've been trying to track down Sherwin, even though I didn't know his name. But I heard that you had tour-managed Lil Peep and Power Trip. And I was just like, whoa, like the duality of man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's like one of the coolest things you can do when it's like, you know, like just like taste. You know what I mean? You can't teach taste. I quote Tyler Bradbury. But if you're new, give us a 5-star. Tell your friends. The best marketing is word of mouth. And today my guest is Sherwin. How are you doing, sir?
Good. Thank you for having me, bro. It's cool because I've been listening to this podcast for a second. You've had a lot of the homies on, so it's cool to be here.
I'm really geeked that you like it. You know what I mean? I'm just like right now you're showing me around all your stuff and like you tell me about, you know, the way you met cemetery.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wow, like it's cool that you like, you know what I mean? Like I don't really see myself as doing this for like, I don't know. I just don't see it as a big thing, but you know, I do get hit up a lot. Like, or like, oh, I heard this episode, and they send me like a link to like. I was like, okay, like that's like I forgot I even said that, which is cool. But so you've been you are a tour manager/manager/consultant. Mm-hmm. You've tour managed Lil Peep. Power Trip, Ghost Mane, Zulu, Narrowhead, Jesus Peace. Is there anyone I'm missing? Oh, Cemetery.
Yeah, I've tour managed Off, Keith Morris's new band. Tour managed a few rappers.
All cool bands. All is that like on purpose? Like you're like I'm only tour managing something cool or managing at all?
I definitely am a fan of everybody I work with, which I think is very lucky because I definitely know some people that get some gigs maybe that they're not stoked on musically, but honestly it's more so if like I can work with you as if you're cool as a person. Like I don't have to necessarily be a fan. It's great though when it works out that way where I'm actually like, oh, I really like this band, I fuck with this band or this artist, so like it's like a pleasure to go on tour with you and make money with you or whatever. But it's like, so you know, I'm blessed in the fact that I'm actually a fan of a lot of the people I work with. Yeah,
like we talked earlier about you building the venue / house with Riley. Like you're a hardcore kid through and through. You've been around. How old are you?
37.
And in a way, I guess in a graduating, I guess lenses, you are now still part of the hardcore scene. You know what I mean? Like
I'm not.
You're managing all these bands that are like still young, you know what I mean, and trying to find their way, like Zulu and Narrowhead is still like, who knows what Narrowhead can do. They're like, they have an accessible sound. But
it's funny though, you call it new and young. I mean, Narrowhead's probably been a band for 10 years almost.
Really?
Yeah
I didn't even know that. I'm sorry.
Fine. I grew up in Texas, so I just remember like their first few shows, like the early lineup, the early music. But it's cool like to see what it's blossomed into, and it's like,
damn, I thought they were like a band for like, I mean, how many records do they have? About like three?
I think they have two or three full lengths. I could be wrong. But they had a lot of EPs, a lot of singles, 7-inches. Mm-hmm. And even like they've been through so many formations of the band. So, but it's cool because like now, like I remember seeing like their first few shows and going them, helping them with some of like the early shows around Texas and even around America. And now like they're playing Coachella this year and like stuff like that. So, but yeah, they've been... It's just cool too because I'm friends with them, so it makes it really easy when it's like people I like, people I respect, and then now they like, even when they asked me, I was like I was very flattered because I was like, fuck with y'all and I love y'all, I'm very busy, but let me like move some stuff around and work y'all into this. And they're patient. I think it took me, because I was like, I think I was on tour when they asked me to work with them, and I was like, let me get home and you guys get home and let's really dig into it. And now it's been really fun, so it's cool just working with like people you've like known for that long, they're close with.
So you tour manager Narrowhead, I mean Zulu's also I guess younger band even though they've been around, but I mean yeah, you're it's like so sick how yeah, I mean I think that pretty much every band you're on I like them in a way.
Cool. And I mean, like, which,
but it's so you're 37. You've been doing this for a minute. We gotta take it back to your childhood.
Okay.
Talk about your childhood. Your parents, siblings, what like that formed, I guess your I guess who you are.
Yeah, my parents are immigrants from Iran. They moved here.
Your first generation.
Yeah, they moved here in '85, and had my sister. I've got one older sister. Born and raised in North Texas, like that's where they immigrated from Iran to, and grew up in Dallas, just like I guess pretty normal. It's, at least for me, it felt normal. Like I don't look back and I'm like, that was weird, but you know, grew up in an inner city, went to school, like got exposed to a lot of like American culture, just because all I knew was what my parents knew, and I think through that, it just like kind of shaped me always into being into different stuff that I didn't know about, like alternative music or whatever when I was young. It wasn't until I was like in middle school, started finding out about things, and my sister started going to shows when she was probably like 15, 16 with some of her friends, and my parents were like, you have to take your brother if you're going out. So I went to some like early, just like, yeah, early like weird punk shows, hardcore, not hardcore shows, but like more like I saw like Saves the Day when I was like 13 or 14. I saw like Get Up Kids. I saw a lot of like early wave emo stuff like that, yeah, which was really cool and really like formative. And through those bands and like buying their CDs and stuff, because like I was like 14 years old when I got a job and used all my paycheck to buy CDs. Like that was, going to the record store was like my favorite thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then buying a physical CD, looking at the liner notes, who did this band think, or like what band shirt are they wearing in this picture, and then I'd like have to find out about that next band or whatever. And I think that's also like, there's a time when like Napster showed up and it was like early internet file sharing.
Yeah.
And I was like definitely on that. I was like 14, just like leaving my parents' computer on overnight to download like two songs.
Yeah.
Like an Anna Flag song or like, you know, a Descendant song or something like that. And I just like kind of was like following the trail, the dotted path of like, oh, this band leads to this band. But, you know, I had friends in like that skated. I had metalhead friends, and I had like their parent, like those kids' parents were hella cool and always being like, oh, you're a fan of this band? I'll take you to their concert for your birthday, and we'll bring your friend Cheryl in or whatever. So like I got to see like Green Day when I was like 13 years old, which is like very formative. Like that's like such a crazy memory for me.
What era of Green Day was this?
I think it was a Warning album, but like obviously I was like super into their older, like the early stuff, you know, but Warning was like fresh on the market. So I remember like all the tour merch and logo was like the new stuff. But I had a friend who was super into metal, and he got me into metal, and his mom took us to like see Slayer when I was like 13 years old. And that's how I found out. It was a tour called Tattoo the Earth. It was like Slayer, Slipknot, Hatebreed, Seven Dust. Who else played? A lot of crazy stuff. Static X, whatever. It was like pretty much a new metal, touring new metal thing. But like, I saw Hatebreed for the first time. I didn't even heard of them. And I was like, what the hell is this? And I remember like going up to him and talking to them at their booth at this Tattoo of the Earth and being like, what the hell, you know? And they gave me like a 2-song demo, which I wish I held on to. I don't know where that is, but
oh, you don't know where it's at now?
Oh no, I've looked for it, trust me, because I've seen it on eBay, and I'm like, damn, I remember I had that at some point. But
it was a 2-song demo for like the record that was coming up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think it was gonna be like their first Victory release, maybe.
What record was it? Like, what? You don't remember what record it was gonna lead
up
to?
I was in middle school, so 13. This is so
what year is it?
Like 14 years, 15 years ago.
Maybe leading up to Perseverance.
Something like that. I'd have to like timeline it out. Yeah. I was like also so oblivious to everything back then. Like,
and they give you the 2-song demo to either Perseverance or maybe Rise of Brutality. That's hard.
Yeah. And so I just remember like being like, wow, I can like talk to the band here. But then
were people now pressing them on their booth? Like, yeah, at the time?
I don't remember it being like that.
Like, people weren't really crazy over Hatebreed.
It's funny. Well, no, I think it was like Slayer was playing, so like the crowd is very much like geared towards metal.
Yeah.
So I think there was definitely love for the hardcore band that was on this big metal fest, but they were maybe a little overlooked back then. And I think even as a kid, I didn't obviously appreciate it enough because I don't even retain much info from that meeting. But but it's cool because like now you see Josta around. He runs a fest in Milwaukee now.
Yeah.
A band I tour managed played it, and it was just like cool. Like I was like, damn, this is a full circle moment, you know? Like, here's a guy I met when I was in middle school, and his band was opening a big metal fest,
and now he's
running big metal fest, and I'm with a band that's playing it, and that's some crazy stuff. But through that, like, just met the metal community was really cool. The punk community in North Texas was really cool, and I kind of would see some of the same faces at the different shows. Like, even when I'd go see like a metal show, I'd see some of those guys at like some of the punk shows I'd go to or whatever. And then through that, I think someone just handed me a flyer one day. It was like a DIY show, and at the bottom it's DallasHardcore.com, and it was just like a message board. And that was like the era of internet when it was like message boards, and it was all just Dallas hardcore message board. And it was great because it was like such a good resource for me to find out about all the shows. I was like, oh, I didn't even know half the stuff was going on. And I met so many friends through there that are still my friends today. Like, you know, kids I was just like dorking out with on the internet. And like, now I still see them. I still know them. They're still friends of mine. But that was just like a good networking spot for like the area and the scene. There was a Texas board too, the Texas Hardcore board. And like, people were always talking. And through that, I was also sort of being like, oh, like, when by the time I got a driver's license, I was like, oh, I can go to Houston to see this tour. I didn't, you know, making friends in Houston. I'd go to Tulsa to see shows. It was a 6-hour drive. And, you know, me and my friends would just do it because, like, that's what we thought you had to do. And it was cool. Like, we just became closer through these, like, going around meeting all these people in different cities. Our scenes would start merging with their scenes, or our tours would go to their towns and vice versa. So, like, just became really, it just became really, like, kind of like
organic,
its own ecosystem, it seemed like. So it was, like, super natural, really cool, just, like, meeting all these people. And a lot of these people are still my friends. So that was just, like, how I kind of remember it coming up. Like, I didn't give a fuck about school. So, like, punk, hardcore, metal was a
good thing. You didn't go to...
I did. I graduated high school, but I almost failed by absence because I was just leaving.
And your parents, being from Iran, weren't, like, you know, immigrant mentality? They weren't, like, on you?
They were on my sister a lot more because she was older. And I think she had her shit figured out. She's a good kid. She, like, went to school. She's, like, went to pharmacy school. She's a genius. She's, like, as... kids, she's like super normal.
She's and American elite. Yeah,
like, well, this is exactly what my parents wanted. They wanted to come here, go to school, become a doctor. A
lawyer, so you were like off the hook.
I don't know. I wouldn't say that. They're on my ass, but I was just doing my thing. Like, I just didn't vibe with school. I did graduate in the end, like, kind of just to kind of be like, all right, now can you get off my back, kind of shit. But
you didn't go to college either.
I did a little bit, but like. I left to go on tour. Like, I remember I was, like, enrolled and I withdrew because I was like, oh, I told my parents, I was like, don't worry, I'm going to withdraw this semester, go on this tour, and when I come back, I'll go to school. And to be honest, I just never stopped touring.
What tour was that?
I think Iron Age. Probably an Iron Age tour, if I remember correctly. And so, like, but then it was just, like, after that tour, it was, like, the Power Trip tours and everything. So I was just, like, kind of always using the excuse to be, like, oh, I got to go. I'm out. Like, we got to go run this tour or whatever. So I kind of, like, delayed it as much as I could. And then I was, like, all right, I'm just going to be, I got to figure this out some way without this being a factor in my life. And I tried, you know, like, you know, I lived in Dallas for a while, worked regular ass jobs or whatever. And then... but touring was like kind of my focus, but like putting on shows was really fun. And every now and then, you know, like we'd have to do like a show, like it would like lose money or something, but it was like something I still didn't care about. Like I was like working jobs, so I'd, if a show even didn't make money, I'd throw my own money in to help the band out if I could, you know.
What was going through your head at the time? Like being a young kid, it's like, I mean, if it was me, I would be like, man, I'm losing money. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like,
I'd say I didn't care. To me, like, because even
early... What about it did you love the most? Or, like, what kind of kept you pushing?
Well, because every now and then I'd be like, all right, if I lost 50, 75 bucks on a show, maybe I can make it back on another one or something. And that's kind of, like, sometimes I'd be like, wow, this show made a ton of money. I'm going to, like, pay myself a little. And back, like, now looking back, I'm like, that wasn't even 10% of what the show made. I'd be like, I'm taking $20 for the gas I used today or whatever. But, and like, I hand bands, and I was like, oh, not guilty of it, but I was like very happy to do that. I booked a few shows when I lived in Chicago, only like 5 or 7 shows. And I remember that band Foreseen from Finland.
Yeah.
Like, they're from Finland. I wanted to be sure they got paid as much as possible. They asked me, they're like, do you think we can get $700? Which for a DIY show was kind of, back then, you know, maybe considered a lot. But I was also like, no, like, I'll personally pay you $700 if it doesn't do well. And I was able to give them like $2,000 or whatever. So it felt very good. But at the beginning of the show, I was like, God, I'm on the hook for $700. Those are my boys. So I always wanted, you know, they took care of Power Trip in Europe, and the least I could do is take care of them in my city, in Chicago at the time. So like, something like that. I just remember that being like, to me, I was like, it'll make sense. Like, everything will figure itself out. I was never like going hungry because I paid a band to come play Dallas or something like that. It was always like money I had. I was working just like random jobs as a 14-year-old, still living with my parents, so I didn't have like bills really. And by the time I was like 16, I was like, all right, like, I want this band to come to Dallas, so I'd be like, I'll pay you whatever you guys need. And it worked out most of the time. It was very rare I had to like go in the red on something.
And besides, I guess, MySpace or Messenger, like, what are the ways bands hit you up, like, back in the day?
I think it was a lot of word of mouth, because I think the DIY scene was just that.
They would just call you.
Sometimes, but I think a lot of it was, like, people would email, people would message you, one band would recommend you, or, like, I remember... sometimes it'd be like, hey, my other band is trying to come through next month. And I'm like, we already have that. Yeah, I already know you. Like, I'll book your show again or whatever. So it was, I mean, we were on the internet at that point, you know, the internet.
The internet, okay.
Like,
internet
heavily involved. So yeah. I wouldn't say it was as much as, like, people calling me. Or maybe I'd be like, you'll call me and let's sort out the details. But, like, 9 times out of 10, it was just, like, via email or messages. Some Facebook Messenger or whatever the fuck. Like, I think a lot of – I used to book a lot of tours through Facebook, just, like, hitting up people that somebody referred me to or something. It worked out, you know.
We gotta have it on the record. What were some of the early, like, what some of the bands? What some of the bands that now are, you know, oh, you booked that band, you know, type thing?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Because I was involved in, like, between the collective of people, like, there's probably a lot of bands, you could say, but I can't, like, to be, like, I was, like, yeah, you know, like, it was either me, Riley, John, like, Parade of Flesh is, like, a booking agency out of, or a promoter out of Texas. And he started out kind of doing, like, more indie and rock and stuff like that, like, but he was seeing me and Riley do all these hardcore shows, and he was also booking some too, and we were kind of like, who is this guy? We don't know him. Is this, like, some kind of weirdo? Like, you know, sometimes you gotta be a little protective of who's booking certain, like, your shows or your hardcore shows. And then, like, he reached out to us and was like, yo, like, y'all are cool, I'm not even trying to step on your toes, do you guys just want to handle the hardcore and metal and punk stuff, and I'll just, like, kind of help you guys and bankroll it, and if these guys have agents that maybe need deposits or contracts or ticket counts, I can handle all that. So, like, that was cool because it was, like, a dude who's, like, understood, and I'm still friends with John. Like, John's still my boy, but he had a good understanding of, like, hey, I'm not even, like, Nicky was like, I'm not, like, not that he wasn't trying to book hardcore, he's like, y'all just understand this stuff better. You would pick the bands, the better bands to add to the shows. You'd pick the venue probably better. So he kind of, like, gave us that step up. So that was really helpful. So, I don't know, like, we worked with so many cool bands, like Tidal Fight and stuff like that. And I remember, like, Trapped Under Ice coming through, and Parade of Flesh booked it with me and Riley, like, kind of helping out with it, and a bunch of other stuff that is huge now. And it's, so, like,
you and Riley were, like, a big part of it. How'd you meet Riley?
Through shows. Through Dallas Hardcore, pretty much. Like,
you just met him at a show.
He was on DallasHardcore.com, like, always. Like, I think he had a job where he was, like, being paid to be online, so he was, like, on there talking all the time.
Okay.
Or maybe he was in school. I can't remember. But I remember he was just super active, and we were always, like, just, like, yucking it up on there. He was, like, funny as hell. And then, like, some of the shows I'd see him around at, and, like, I can't even pinpoint the time we started talking or being homies. But I remember, like, one of the first shows I went to that was, like a real DIY show at this, like, spot I found out about via the message board. I, like, bought a shirt from the band, and I, like, left it. I, like, lost it or something at the show. And I, like, posted on the board. I was like, yo, did anyone find this shirt? And he DM'd me, and he'd be like, yo, like, I bought another shirt from them. Do you want it? Like, he just tried to give it to me.
Wow.
And I was like, damn. Like, you know, as a 15-year-old kid, I was like, damn, this kid's nice. This kid's cool. And, like, we just stayed cool throughout the years. And, like, his band started doing their things and touring. He had an early band. He had a later band.
What was the early band?
Balls Out.
Balls Out.
Yeah, it was. he didn't like talking about it that much, but, like.
So is there another at bat after that before Power Trip?
I don't think, maybe, but I don't
just
think
Balls so. Out.
Because he has, out. Yeah, he did Balls Out, and then he went into Power Trip, and then Power Trip he's taken serious on, like, a different level. Just, and, like, the guy who drummed in his old band drummed in Power Trip now, and.
Crystal.
No, it's this guy, Marcus.
Marcus.
And Marcus left Power Trip to kind of do his own thing for a little bit. And now Marcus drums for Ghostmane.
Oh.
Yeah, so, like.
Cool, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, the original drummer of Power Trip now drums for their Ghostmane. Yeah.
Sick.
But, so, anyways, but, like, yeah, just, like, Riley was always around, always chill, like, always see him at shows. We'd go get food. We'd start hanging out. He'd, like, invite me to his parents' house to swim or whatever. So, like, we just, like, became close through that stuff. And, like, if there was a show in Houston, like, we, like, be like, yo, we gotta go. And, like, we all pile into a car and go down there together, or Tulsa or whatever. So, and that, and just a lot of partying together. So it all kind of blurred into one. And then when he started a new band, when he started Power Trip, like, I was like, yo, let's let me put out the demo. So I put out the demo on vinyl for him, because, like, you're just my boy, you know, that's what we were doing. And so I toured with them on their early tours too. And yeah, it was just.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Me and him were always, I feel like we had a lot of the same ideas of like, oh, this is how it should be. So like me and him, it was nice to have somebody that was always egging me on to do something crazy, which in retrospect,
like what?
Crazy. Like what? Like opening a warehouse, like moving into a warehouse with 10 friends and trying to make it a venue in a social club, essentially, yeah, or whatever the hell, or, you know, or even it's in some capacity, make Power Trip a huge band. And I mean, like, at the time you hear that and you're like, oh, okay. And now you're like, damn, he was right. Like, that is a huge band. Like, they are huge. You may, you know, like, I feel like he willed some things into existence by just being the force, being like pushing it, you know? So it was always a adventure around him. It was funny. Yeah, he was an interesting dude.
So once you leave high school, talk about your life up to early 20s.
I was just working and I was like living around Texas. Like, I think I moved to Austin around after I graduated high school, just because I want to be a little more in the mix with music stuff and kind of just like get out of Dallas, like get a new scenery around me. I was still always back in Dallas, like almost like weekly or monthly, I felt like, but it was good to be in a different city and try or just experience something different. Like, the punk scene in Austin is way more popping than maybe like the more traditional hardcore scene at that time. Mm-hmm. There's like so much sick punk stuff going on. That band, like Repercussions, was from there.
Repercussion.
I don't know. It's that dude Sean that was in Cold Sweat.
Uh-huh.
So good. And I remember like Chaos and Taos was like becoming a thing. Like, it was like a reoccurring fest. I think it was called like Prank Fest first. And I think he had even a different name for it prior to that.
Prank Fest. That's a kind of cool name.
Yeah. And it had, dude, it was the best punk lineup. And I just remember like going to it when I was a kid. And pretty much I went to almost every Chaos and Taos. I think the only one I missed, I was on tour in like Europe or something. But those were like really formative years for me, like seeing some of these bands. And like, that was really cool.
You did mention that punks will hang out hardcore kids will go to punks. Do you think that's the, like, besides that, there's a reason you kind of fuck with all the music? Because, like, I mean, at least now, like, I don't know, kids staying like in the same lane.
Really?
Yeah. At least from what I see.
I don't know, because, like, okay, so from my perspective, like, I get where you're coming from. Like, yes, there's definitely like these genre lines, and there's kids that don't really, you know, there's hardcore kids that don't listen to punk, and there's punks that don't listen to metal, and vice versa. But it was really interesting, because Dallas was pretty unique in the way that you'd see almost the same faces at all the shows.
Interesting.
But you were asking,
did that influence, like, you getting into all this? Like, because now you also like rap and you know all about all these songs.
Because, I mean, maybe I wasn't as involved in the rap scene growing up, but it was still like I had a group of friends that were listening to 3-6 Mafia, A-Ball, MJG, like tons of Houston rap when I was like mad young, like in middle school, listening to like Screw and stuff like that. And I was like, so I feel like it's always just been there. And then for me, like now when I'm working with like dudes like Lil Peep, or like when I'm on tour with another rapper, I'm seeing hardcore kids at their shows and like punks at the shows. And like, I almost feel like to the younger generation, genre almost doesn't exist, but maybe it's just that scene. Cause like SoundCloud kids, these SoundCloud rap tours I might go on, I see every walk of life at their shows, and it's really interesting to me. And I remember being on the Lil Peep tour and seeing a kid in a Fury shirt at a show in Atlanta, and I was like, bro, what's up? And he was like, oh, and he was like embarrassed that I like spotted him there. And I was like, no, this is hella cool to me, like, that you're like rocking a Fury shirt that's and you're at a Lil Peep show, you know? Because like, that's, to me, I'm like, that's exactly my world. It's like a dude in a Fury shirt at a Lil Peep show. Yeah. Like, that might be me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like, I don't know, like, it's hard to pinpoint it, because also a lot of these rappers want to be rockers, and a lot of these rockers want to start looking like rappers, so yes. I feel like you see rap dudes wearing punk jackets, punk patches, punk vintage tees or whatever. And it's funny because it's an aesthetic, but obviously I feel like there's just like kids that are now fans of everything. And I see them at the same shows. I'll be on tour with a rapper, and then a month later I'm on tour with a band, same city. I'll see that kid. There's a kid in New York who I've seen. I ran into him at a cemetery show. I ran into him at the Show Me the Body Jesus Piece show. I ran into him after that. I was in New York with some other band, and he was there too. And I was like, bro, everywhere I go, I see you.
And it's not to put down these kids, but I think there's a specific type of kid who likes rap, like Show Me the Body, like Zulu, and likes Trash Talk, specifically the Wakey P.
Yeah.
Like, I met those kids. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're also at art shows.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. This, like, which is cool. You know what I mean? Like, but, like, yeah. Like, I would just like to see, and there is some, I'm not saying this, like, oh, like, but there's some kids who I'm like, oh, you're, like, at the, you're, like, I don't know, like, at a Castillo gig, but you're also at, like, I don't know, like, for the children, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's, like, a couple, you know what I mean? I like that, you know, it's cool. And also, like, those are the type of kids, in my opinion, who always dress normal. Like, you dress normal, you know what I mean? Like have you met that kid, Oscar Guerra?
Yeah, I used to live with him.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. And, like, I've, like, heard a lot of things about him. I'm like, oh, like, they're like, oh, yeah, he's just a kid who, like, well, I mean, now not a kid, but, like, he's a kid who just a Dodger hat. Yeah. And just will be at the Crespon gig, but also be at the... at the Zabawa show, I'm just like, oh, that's kind of me. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's funny too, because there is definitely people that stay in their lane. Like, they only fuck with punk. But I mean, like, dude, how boring does that sound? You know what I mean? Like,
it also makes it cooler. It makes it more refreshing. Yeah. Like, when you're like, there's, like, right now, I've been listening to, like, what's the word? Like, Infest. Like, leading up to a gig. But then, like, I'm like, oh, let me play some, like, Oi. It makes it just kind of like, you kind of stop, turn off that power balance. And then, but then, like, oh, I'm going to listen to, like, like, I don't know, 36 Mafia first record. You know what I mean? Like, it makes it refreshing. You know what I mean? Like,
even when I was booking shows, when I between bands, if it was a hardcore show, I would only play rap between the bands. Who wants to hear more hardcore? Yeah. You know? And in my head, I was like, this is regular. And I would get some people complaining and be like, dude, why aren't you? And I'm like, dude, aren't we sick of that right now? Or at least let's, like, cleanse the palate before we get a little more of it. But, I mean, you know, I feel like, if it's good music, it's good. It's going to draw people in. If it's, like, interesting, if it's culturally relevant, all this stuff. But it has to hit on a lot of marks. It's not like I just like any rap or any band. Yeah. None of us do, right? It has to, like, connect with you in some way. So, I don't know. It just, like, depends on what you are seeking out of stuff, too. Like, I feel like if you listen to a lot of this rap that's coming up, like, I mean, I don't think people are going to really agree with me on this, but it's, like, it's pretty fucking punk what these rappers are doing. Like, they're putting out, it's not much different than what bands are doing. It's like they're putting out a demo online out of their bedroom. They record in their bedroom. They're going on tours, the DIY tours, playing living rooms and stuff. It's not much different than what a lot of bands I worked with did. And, like, they're really getting some grassroots stuff going. And then, yeah, it's rap. So it's like people are like, oh, you're doing house shows as a rapper? And, like, they have to go through those things, but it's like
it's even more brutal as a rapper.
I would think so. It could be, I think so. Like, and also I think, like, it's like they have the luxury, I guess you could call it that, but they have the luxury of just being like, oh, you want me to come play your house in Denver? I just can get on a flight with my laptop and I can come play your show. If you want, and I can't tell you how much this happens with, like, when I started working with Power Trip, the email account, just people being like, come play Warsaw, Poland, and we were like, this is, like, early in their band, and we're like, dude, we would love to, like, how do we get there? And, like, we start adding up everything, we're like, this is impossible, you know? But in their sense, like, when a rapper would get hit up, hey, come play my living room, they can actually do it, and it's, like, feasible. And so, like, I think it's, like, they're doing their own thing, printing their own merch, running their own web stores, like, as much as they can. Like, obviously, what is considered, like, DIY is very different to everybody, but, like, a lot of these guys get it off the muscle like that, and obviously some of them get picked up and signed and become
Lil Peep.
And they get a huge machine behind them, and that's cool. But Peep was playing DIY shows and weird living rooms. There's footage of that online, you know, like, it was maybe a quicker come up than like Trash Talk had playing DIY shows, let's say. But it's a grind either way you do it. It's just, like, the right place, right time for some people.
Passion overall? Is this just passion, I guess?
I think you just got to really be able to create that energy. It's unique.
You got to be able to translate what you feel. And I feel like even like now that like, now that I'm like trying to write lyrics, I'm like I got a lot to say, but I don't know how to put it in a song. You know what I mean? Like, and also like not being like super personal, or it's just like, what are you saying? You know what I mean? Or like, or also super vague. You know what I mean? Like, and like just trying to like, again, just.
Dude, that's one of the hardest things is tell a story.
Yeah.
Like make a story, you know, and make people interested in it. But, you know, it's like, that's the thing about being creative. You just got to make your, be vulnerable and show people like kind of something maybe you were like containing it inside of you, or maybe like within you that they didn't know about or whatever, and make yourself vulnerable. And honestly, that's kind of scary when you think about it, like doing that to a room full of people you don't fucking know. That's, that can be a lot, but it's cool. It translates in a different way. You can be a punk and do it, you can be a hardcore kid and do that, you can be a rapper and do it. So I think it's just like, speak your truth, do whatever you want. There's no fucking rules anymore. I feel like it used to be a lot more rigid.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like it was weird to see bands touring with rappers or having different genres on the bill, and now it's so regular. You know what I mean? Like Lollapalooza, when it came out, was seen as like crazy that there were so many genres on one lineup, and now that's everyone.
That's what makes the bill.
Yeah. And to be honest, it's not everybody can do it well. I mean, yeah. I think Nature World was like a great example of a mixed bill that was in, had its like finger on the pulse of culture, of what's today, tomorrow, and the past. Like they had good generational like heritage acts, like I don't know, Tommy Wright played, and Lil Peep played, Hatebreed played, Turnstile played, Jesus Piece played, Momentum played, like you're talking about, and like,
and then just to see that played,
yeah, and I mean, look, it's Show Me the Body played, like, yeah. But I mean, and all these artists I just mentioned are like on a different trajectory, or like so far from, and like it's kind of crazy when some people look at those lineups and like, you're telling me Sicko Mob was on the same stage as
Soulja Boy and like Lil Peep, No Warning, like,
and No Warning, and just Show Me the Body, and like all this stuff. So I think it's just like, you see a lot of mixed bill stuff, but some of it doesn't make sense to me, but it's fine. Like, do you, but like being culturally relevant and like knowing real underground and really like the stuff that actually has like passion in it and like means something to somebody, it's hard to find. But like, it's, and like curate, like for lack of a better term, I guess, like I'm air quoting, but it's like to curate something like that is hard. So like, it was like cool to see Nature World do it and have the success they did with it. And like, it's funny, I work with big booking agents that do these giant festivals, and it's funny how much Nature World still comes up in those conversations, because like, it's hard to recreate what those guys had.
And how many years was it? Like,
I think they did like 4 or 5.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
still so say.
Yeah, and I mean, look at even Sound and Fury has like grown into something so crazy. Because I remember even Power Trip playing like 2009. That was my first one I went to, and then like I went to last year's, and was just mind blown about how big it's grown. And honestly, it was like amazing to be there. It felt crazy to me because I was like, damn, I met that fool at the Sound and Fury 2009. Here I am, Sound and Fury 2023. Like, we're still kicking it. And, you know, they're still involved in whatever way. And I'm still kind of just showing up. I'm like, you know, like, I feel like the scene is definitely being moved forward by a lot of really new, interesting bands, people, and collectives that are like really pushing it forward. So it's cool to kind of like sit back and be like, damn, like, I'm still learning every day about these new acts, these new bands, and these new people that are showing up and like taking the reins and really steering it in a cool direction. So it's just like, from where things were with Sound and Fury, with Nature, all that stuff, it's like the culture has become just stronger. The people, it's almost the same people when you look around, but it's like just becoming stronger. Maybe some new faces in the mix, which is awesome, and that's like what you want, right? But yeah, it's hard to create these worlds. Yeah. It really is.
It's also like, I mean, also like those bands were big, but also time and place, because like those bands were big but not too big. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I don't even matter. Like, Soulja Boy wasn't even like, like before before he got popular again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let's talk more about your, I guess, managing career. You started off with Power Trip or Iron Age. You said it was
I was like working. I mean, it's hard for me to pinpoint when it started, because like I worked with like Iron Age and Power Trip in just like weird capacity, like in the very minimal capacities, because like I was just around and I was like, do you need someone to like handle these emails that no one's answering, or like handle this or that? And it was like, I think even with the Iron Age, like, I came on one of their first, like, one of the first tours I ever went on was with them. It was just me. Also, I had to, like, figure out how to tour. I had no idea what I was doing. But it was just, like, I could be involved in any capacity. Like, do y'all need me to drive? Y'all want to, like, someone to reply to emails? Do you want me to, like, book our hotels or whatever? So I was, like, doing stuff like that.
So I guess I was, like, quote-unquote, the pinpoint. Being the friend on the tours.
Kind of.
Yeah, like, I mean, in a way, that's...
And I put out, like, Power Trip's demo on vinyl. So I was like, yo, we'll bring these records and we'll sell them and y'all make some money or whatever. And I was just, like, trying to help the machine. I think, like, you know, everyone wants a tour, but I was... Some of them were, like, so focused on writing music, more involved in maybe booking the shows. And I'd be like, all right, like, let me get us there, like, you know, or whatever. Or let me put out a record for y'all to help y'all go on tour or whatever.
That's really cool.
So, that, I mean, I use management, I guess, really loosely.
Cause yeah.
I wasn't even involved with record deal conversations back then, because I was just like, oh, yeah, y'all go talk, you know? Yeah. And I was like, hey, how'd it go? Like, what happened? And so, like, then I didn't really start, like, full-on managing acts until maybe, like, 2018, something like that.
That's fairly recent.
Yeah, yeah. I was doing mostly tour management from maybe like 2015. I've been doing, like, I was like tour managing pretty heavily, always just like hands on with the artist. And then I started managing, and to be honest, like, I was managing a lot of SoundCloud dudes out the gate and producers. And
you're managing producers?
Yeah.
How does that work?
You know, like, one of my guys was making beats and he was getting really good placements, and I was just, like, helping navigate some stuff, help him connect him with other people who would want to get on his beats, or, like, help get him remixes or whatever.
Wow, I didn't know that was a thing.
Or even publishing deals or whatever. So did a couple of that, did some of that for some of those guys.
What was your first, I guess, real tour managing job?
Like, outside of, like, hardcore?
Yeah, where, like, oh, we want you and you're going to get paid.
Maybe, I guess I'd say Off was probably the first one that wasn't like a hardcore band.
And what did they see? Or, like, is there like a tour that you did, like, oh, I was with this band and then they saw that and they asked me?
One of my buddies was their tour manager, but he was in another band. So his band was going to do something, so he couldn't tour manage this Off tour. And it was like, Off wasn't even promoting an album. It was Keith Morris wrote a book.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a tour promoting the book. So
was,
like,
that the autobiography?
Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy. I was reading it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
It's just a cool little... Yeah.
Dude, what's really cool is just, like, being able to sit with him and talk with him about it.
Yeah.
Like, but it's on that tour. It was like, we play a show, but before the show, at a bookstore, a record store, he'd have a reading, a meet and greet, a signing, whatever. So we were doing a book event and then a show every night. And they were also filming a movie during that whole tour, which was like a whole, threw me for a loop, because one of the guys kept trying to, not Keith, but one of the other guys was like, you should act in it. Can you say this? And I'm like, bro, I'm no fucking actor. Like, but yeah, so like that was like the first tour. I think that was just like people I didn't know hiring me to come and handle their shit. And it was cool. Like, and just like, I was like, yo, I gotta do this. It's like Keith Morris, he's a legend.
And that was your first real, like...
I'd say so. I think that was, like,
20. What were some tours before that was leading... That kind of prepared you to, like...
Probably just Iron Age and Power Trip stuff. I toured with Vulgar Display. Okay. I toured with that band Modern Pain. Like, I helped set up a tour with them, like, around the country, around the time their record came out. I toured with... Well, Build and Destroy and Razzle Dazzle. Like, toured with them.
So, strictly hardcore. And then a little bit of, like, kind of... curveballs, and then off was your, like, step into something else.
Just, yeah, I'd say, like, a step into a project with people I didn't, like, know personally. Like, I knew who Keith was, obviously, because he's a legend. And I was like, yeah, but it was cool because, you know, he just nice, because, like, I'd be driving, I'd be, like, listening to something. Like, I was like, I had my iPod on shuffle, and it was like, War came on, and he just sat up and he was like, yo, is this War? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, yo, and he, like, told me the story about when they shared Black Flag shared a practice space with War back in the day, and how they used to, like, just kick it with War and party with them. And I was like, what? Like, that's some crazy lore I did not know about.
Yeah.
Like, you're telling me, like, you and War were in the same room? Like, that's Black Flag and War were sharing a practice space is a crazy concept in my head.
Yeah.
But even, like, I don't know, I'd be listening to, like, Young Thug and, like,
Keith Morris to like sit up and be like, what did he just say? And I'd have to like pause it and like explain the bar to him, and he'd be like, that's crazy, and like lay back down.
Like you explaining Young Thug to Keith Morris is fucking
mind blowing.
That's the coolest thing.
Like, yeah, and he was so cool to hang out with. And I just saw him recently. Zulu played an event at the Broad Museum, and he was a speaker at that event. Have you ever been to that museum?
No.
It's incredible. It's free too. If you ever want to go, just go. Okay. Like, you just gotta like schedule an admission. But so it's mostly post-war modern contemporary art. It's super very expensive, very fancy art in there. They asked Zulu to come play it, and then they were like, yeah, you're gonna play inside. And I was like, you want them to play inside the museum? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, yo, do we need any more insurance for this event? And they're like, why? And I was like, why don't you go watch some YouTube videos? I'm like, let's talk about this next week. And they came back to me next, like a few days later, like, hey, we're moving the show into the courtyard. And I was like, yeah, good idea. But Keith was there, and it was cool to see him again and like link up and just like talk to him about what's going on with him, you know, like, you know, Off still doing, I think Off is not doing as much. I think he's going to do some Circle Jerk stuff and some Black Flag stuff, which is awesome, you know? So it was just like, that was really cool to work with somebody like that. And
did you know you wanted to be a tour manager?
I think it was just like natural. I was already on tour with all these bands, kind of handling some of the money and the accommodations or whatever. And to be honest, I didn't even know you could make a job out of it like that. You know, I didn't know people would really pay you.
At the time you did, I know you were just
And I mean, like, dude, I know some big tour managers of huge acts, and like, they live very nice, like have multiple homes and whatever. And I'm not, you're not gonna get that off touring with like hardcore bands or punk bands, but like, I'm talking like guys who tour with like stadium acts, arena acts. Like, I didn't know that there was a whole career field in tour management, and now it's like all. I felt like I just fell into it, and I knew what I was doing just from doing it, like off the DIY shit, off the booking, the shows, off just like doing all that. Like, I kind of knew a little bit about everything. Not that I know everything, but like, I learned enough to kind of figure out how to move and make it make sense. And at a certain point, like, some rappers started hitting me up and asking me to go on tour, because they'd be like, damn, this seems, I don't understand this world or how to tour. Cool, I can show you. So like, I did Little Peep's first world tour. I took Shoreline Mafia on their first like five tours, and that was insane. Those guys were just they played the Regent. It's like 1,000 cap, and like, that was like their first like LA big show that sold out. And I was like, okay, these kids are on to something. Their first tour was like huge rooms, like, you know, 2,000-3,000 cap rooms, and it was like their first show, second show, third show ever out of California. And just like being involved with them was crazy, like seeing, because I'm from Texas, like I was very much around in the rap scene, or like not involved as much, but aware of it. And like, you know, like these kids, it's funny just seeing like Lean being talked about again, like it was just like a new thing to them. But I was like, bro, I'm from Texas, like I know about Screw and Swisha House and all that stuff. So like, it was very much like, it was just funny to me. I was like, wow, it's like culturally coming back, like this, the Lean scene, and those guys are like tag bangers, really.
Yeah.
And it was just cool being around while they were having a crazy come up. Like they've split up since, but like, Jeezy's one of the biggest.
Dude, Charlotte Michael was like, the song Musty was.
Musty's a banger.
Dude, that was, a cultural moment.
It was.
It was like, that was itself.
Bro, they used to play Musty four times in a row to end the set because they didn't have enough music yet.
Like,
they,
so fucking
crazy. They'd run it back.
I remember. I remember when.
But those dudes like split up, and like OGZ's now. I could be wrong, but I think OGZ's the biggest Mexican rapper currently. Probably.
I
think currently
maybe. There's not a lot of Mexican rappers that joins me out.
Exactly. And I thought that was really cool, is like they do meet and greets that they did back then, and like it just seemed like young kids come up to OGZ and be like, literally be like shaking because they were so nervous, and be like, yo, you give me hope that like as a Mexican kid I can be a huge rapper or like do whatever I want or whatever. And so like, I was seeing it, I was just like, damn, like, and I kept having to remind them, like, you're culturally relevant. Like, these kids, like, look up to you a lot, so you gotta, like, move a little different. They were moving crazy back then. And I was like, people look up to you, man, just, like, be aware. And now he has a kid, and I think he's a little more, like, pump the brakes and stuff. But, I mean, you know, when they're young and making millions, millions, you can't tell them shit, bro. Like, I was trying to tour manage them was very difficult because they were just going hard. They were partying, getting kicked out of every hotel room, pissing off every venue by just fucking trashing the place or whatever. But no one could tell them shit. They were making millions. They were making their first show on that tour. Their guarantee was like 25K. And this is a crazy story. It was a show supposed to happen in Seattle. So they flew to Seattle. I picked up the van and the crew in LA, my merch guy and my driver. We get in a Sprinter. We drive from LA to Seattle to meet them to start the tour. On the way up, the promoter calls me. Or no, our booking agent calls me. And he's like, yo, the club y'all supposed to play in Seattle shut down because there was a shooting last night. Obviously not related to us at all. And so he's like, there was a shooting last night. So the club's closed. Our show's canceled. I'm trying to move the show. Everyone's being weird about moving the show because they think Shoreline Mafia has gang tie. You know, this could happen again or something, which was bullshit. So he's like, everyone's being really weird about it. But we already have the deposit and I'm going to try to get the rest of the money. And I was like, what? What do you mean? Like, if there's no show, where's the rest of the money? And that the booking agent called the promoter and was like, if you don't pay Sherwin the rest of the fee for the performance that's getting canceled, my agency will never do a show with you again. And they're like one of the biggest booking. It's like 80% of the live music goes through this agency. So this guy had to pretty much get strong-armed for like 12.5 for a show that didn't happen, 25 in total if you add up the deposit, for a show that didn't happen just because like they didn't want to lose it. But it was like, so like now Shoreline doesn't have a Seattle show, right? And they like, somehow some frat boys were like, yo, we have a frat house, like, why don't you come play our house or something? And they like put money, they like put, their manager hit me up, he's like, yeah, they're gonna pay y'all. And we pulled up, it was insane, like it couldn't have happened. And there was like kids with guns and shit at the party. It was getting hectic. And I was like, yo, we gotta go. So we like left right when the cops showed up to like bust the party up. But I just remember that was like supposed to be the first night of tour. And like all this crazy stuff happened. I was like, how the fuck are your shows? If not having a show is this crazy, what is the nights when we have shows gonna be like? And it was fucking insane. Cause they were just going nuts and they could like, they had never even left the country. We went to go play Canada on that tour. And that was just like a whole thing, trying to get them into Canada. And, you know, like making sure we're rolling clean into Canada. Because I was like trying to explain to them. I was like, we're going into a different country. We're about to cross a border. We got to get rid of all the weed. They said, like, oh, the weed's legal in Washington and in Canada. And I was like, yeah, but you can't cross with the boys. we gotta like go super by the book here. Like, I'm not trying to be a cop, but I'm borderline had to like kind of search them one by one and be like, you finding stuff. And I was like, nope, we can't go with that. So we get like a hotel on the American side and have to leave drugs and guns and all kinds of shit in America, go play the show in Vancouver, drive back the hour to America, cross the border to get their stuff back. Like, just crazy shit. Like, that you don't have to deal with bands, you know? Yeah, yeah. Wow. Or as much, I'd say, yeah. As much. Like, but it was, that was an era for sure. So that Shoreline, like, definitely was, like, one of the crazy movements I feel like I was, like, early on involved in. Obviously, it's a world they built. I was just in it.
Yeah.
So that was cool. But, and then through that, so I think I worked with, like, Lil Peep. I worked with Ghost Mane. I met Ghost Mane, too, through that.
How was tour managing Lil Peep?
It's really cool. Like, he was, like, it was very interesting because he hadn't really had a chance to tour and perform yet for people. So, not like, I think people didn't know what to expect yet. And some of the stuff he had done was, like, DIY stuff. Or, like, to be honest, it was just, like, his early stuff, which wasn't really, he hadn't really figured out how to perform yet or be the artist he was trying to be. So, like, some of his early, some of the stuff that was online that's, like, early, even that Nature World set, I remember watching it and be like, oh, this boy needs some, it's a little practice, a little tighten it up. And he did. And, like, getting to see him, like, get super comfortable was, like, on stage was really cool. But seeing him, our first show of that tour was Moscow, Russia. And it was, I had just toured for a month with a band called Chain of Flowers. They're from Wales. They're like a new wave band. They're sick. And then the next day after that tour ended in LA, I had to fly to Moscow with Peep. And like already I was like, I don't know what to expect. This might be a little crazy. But it was so cool because like, just like he was so easy, so chill. But his fans were nuts. So like we get to Moscow and there was hundreds of kids waiting for him at the airport. And then by the time he took his picture, said what's up to the fans.
Yeah.
Took like an hour or two. By the time we get in the van, driven into the city, it's like 2 hour drive. Moscow has terrible traffic. We get to the hotel and the first thing he did was post a picture of himself in the hotel room with the window open. And his fans were able to figure out what hotel we were in by the background. And I remember, like, I left my room to go to the lobby or grab some food or something. And I remember seeing, like, two young girls with, like, pink hair. Very much, like, that's, like, a classic Peep fan look. It's just pink hair. So I remember just seeing, like, two young girls in the hallway. And I just remember just being like, all right, whatever. They're probably staying here. And then when I came back up to that floor, I saw them still, like, kind of aimlessly walking around the hallways, but I didn't think much of it yet. And then little by little, like our group chat started being like, hey, there's fans at the hotel. And I was like, oh, it must be those girls. And then like at like an hour or two later, someone's like, yo, there's like hundreds of fans in the lobby. And I was like, what? And I go down there and the hotel is like, yo, like this is a problem. You know what I mean? Like, and I was like, it's your hotel. I don't know. Is this Russia? I don't know what the rules are here. Like, you tell them what they're not invited by us at all. Little did I know our DJ was hitting up some of the fans, be like, yo, come kick it. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So like some kids were in upstairs, like kicking it with them, that they were like more like friends. Like, yeah. They're just like kicking it. And then there's like hella fans in the lobby, just like swarming and like ending up on different floors trying to look for them. So like they had to like sweep the building and clear it out of all the pink haired kids and stuff. So that was crazy. And then we shot the Benz truck video in Moscow. Like they had a G-Wagon out there for him. And that was kind of crazy. Cause like it was like at night and we're just like shooting street scenes. And it was like pretty, a little sketch maybe. Like it just felt, the energy was weird. And Power Trip had just gone to Russia like a year before. And they got like pulled over by the cops and extorted there. And at some point while we're like filming the video, like the cops pulled them over and I thought they were about to get extorted, but they just got let go and like nothing happened to them. So it was like very chill. But then, you know, the first Russia show was like 7,000 kids sold out, knew every word, which was crazy. And I was like, what the fuck? But then we played two more shows in Russia. Went to Europe. We had like a week off before the European tour started. Like they shot more music videos, did some media and PR stuff. The Euro tour started. Everything was sold out all over Europe. I think we only did like 5 or 6 shows around Europe. And that was crazy. Then we came back to the US and that's when it got really crazy for the US tour, which was like a month long, full US. Like every show was sold out. It was like Beatlemania in some places. Like fans like running into traffic without looking because they thought they had an opportunity to like talk to him or get a picture or whatever. They like just run into the street and I was like, damn, this kid's different, like, you know. But he was always really humble about it. He thought it was like kind of funny and he just like, I don't get it, and he'd like chuckle and apologize. But I was like, dude, it's not your fault. These kids like really adore you like this. It's really cool to see true fans like this. But it was definitely like an eye-opening experience. But he was always so cool, super cool to everybody that like worked with him. Very respectful, really intelligent, and like very sweet. Like I met his family, I met his like grandfather, his grandmother, his mother, his brother, like, and it really helped like kind of like draw the whole picture for me. I'm like, oh, okay. And his like grandfather is like a revolutionary. Like, do you know much about him?
No.
His grandfather like taught at Harvard and was like literally wrote the book on the Zapistas, like the like communism and revolution in Latin America. And like he was like in the ranks with the socialists down there, like not just like writing about them, but like in the mix with them, respected by them kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And his grandfather just like super
well-read, very well-spoken, super intelligent guy, pretty much just like dropped all this knowledge on this kid when he was just like a kid. And like, it's funny because like there's like pictures of Peep when he was like six at a protest with his like grandmother, and you know, like, it's, yeah. And wow. He was like, you know, and he was on that Free Palestine movement, like way, like, I obviously it's like been a thing forever, but I'm saying like,
before it was, yeah,
maybe at the forefront of everybody's consciousness or the media conversation. Like I'm talking like 2017, he's like wearing like a Free Palestine, and for a kid from SoundCloud to wear that, like, it might mean nothing, but like, you know, for a 14-year-old kid that looked up to him, they might actually look into what that means. And like, I think it's cool that you're like on the precipice of being one of the biggest things in the world, but you're still like have morals and like things that have been instilled with you from a very young age. And it's like came from his grandfather and his grandmother, who are both very activists, very like forward-thinking people, even in their, even today, like that's like very much what they do. And you can like, his like grandfather has published many books about, you know, communism, socialism, the Tapistas, like all that stuff in Latin America, a lot of those movements, like he was very much tapped in. And like, I feel like that really rubbed off on Peep's worldview, which was cool, because to be young and be worldly, or at least think on a world level, is hard. It's hard to think past your computer screen or like your street, your block, your neighborhood, your scene, whatever. Like, it was cool to like be like, wow, you're like 18 and you're kind of a little more aware of the world than most. Like, it was cool. Like,
yeah.
So that kind of stuff was just really nice to be around and see. And, you know, like, it was just cool to like being on tour with them, being like DC and like hitting up all my DC friends and like the punks, and then pulling up to like a little Peep show. And there's like a picture of like, a couple of the homies from DC and Peep and me, and it's like,
send it to me, we find it.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, it's like me, it's like Connor from like Red Death and like Brain Tourniquet and stuff, and I think like one of the homies from
London. Is it the one with the long hair?
The drummer.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's him. I think it's like the homie from Line of Judah. It's like a couple other random people, just like, and people were always like, if you like look at that picture, you'd be like, wait, hold on. You got Peep, you got these like DC legends, like, yeah. You know, like,
wow.
But it's just cool because like we.
Brain turn to get Peep.
Wow. I got a picture, yeah. Unheard of. But it was like cool too because like we pull up to like, he played like New York City, and I have a ton of friends show up to the show and just be like, I don't know what this is, but this is crazy, or like this is cool. And like then they were like, oh shit, this is bigger than I even understood. Yeah. Like, you know, when he passed, I think a lot of people were like, oh dude, your guy was huge. And I'm like, yeah. Like, you know, because I think if you're old, a little older, like Peep fans would definitely fall, maybe they're older now obviously, but I'd say like they're 18 and under. When I toured with them, the shows were so young. And it was so funny because the bartenders at these venues were bored as fuck. Maybe just serving a beer to mom or dad who brought the kids, but it was like zero. The bar was making no money. It was 14-year-old kids, 15-year-old kids, and it was cool to see. It's like another youth movement, and that's kind of why I like tied it to punk, or like could at least see like how it reminded me of the punk scene. Like these are young kids that are like pushing what the future is of music. And it's like Peep was taking elements of rock, punk, emo, whatever you want to call it, and like mixing it in with hip hop. And like these kids even started finding out about punk. And
I'm glad you said that, because the Lock Hoodie. Infamous Lock Hoodie.
The Lock Hoodie you wore in the video?
Dude.
That's so funny you mentioned that.
My little sister, she was like, I think I had a cassette I brought from Chris Kirk. I brought from home, and she was like, oh, the little, like, what does that look familiar? And then she didn't talk to me for like whatever. I saw the next day. She's like, wait, do you know that's, you know, like, kind of, did I know?
Yeah,
her?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's when it kind of blew my mind. I was like, holy shit, my sister, who doesn't care about hardcore punk at all, like, knows about this hoodie.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the picture because my friend Max took it, and I can tell you the story. I mean, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, about I want, of course.
Okay, I'll tell you. So, on that Peep tour, do you know Juan Carlos? Are you familiar with him?
Juan Carlos?
Yeah.
No, who's that?
He's from Austin. He does that fest, This Is Austin, Not That Great.
Okay. A punk guy.
He plays in, he's like one of those dudes that's like every band's good. He plays in Strutter. He played in Impalers.
Awesome.
He has other bands too, so I'm like, I don't want to sell him short right here.
They're all punk bands?
Yeah, I think he does. But I mean, you know, he's a rocker through and through, yeah. Like a real one. And I remember when I was going on that Peep tour, I needed to hire a driver, somebody that could drive and do merch. And I hit him up, and I was like, hey, like, do you want to do this tour with me? Like, we knew each other through the scene, like, the Texas scene or whatever. And I was like, yo, I know you tour on, like, a different, like, a higher, not higher level, but, like, you tour a lot. You know your shit, bro. Like, if I'm going to bring somebody out and get him paid, like, I want it to be someone I can trust, and we can have each other's back. So I hit him up. He had just bought, like, a van, like, a 15-passenger van. And I was like, pretty much like, yeah, we'll use Juan Carlos, we'll use his van, we'll just get a trailer, we can knock this tour out. And I was like, you'll like Juan, like, he's sick, he knows good music or whatever. And like instantly him and Peep hit it off, just like on like punk shit, like, and like he's a goofy guy, he's a funny guy, but he is a serious guy at the same time. But like when he's clowning around, it's always fun. So him and Peep always got off on just being funny, like goofy guys together or whatever. That tour, that night was San Francisco. We played Brick and Mortar, and we went back to the hotel. My friend Max Beck is a videographer. He lives in the Bay. He's like shot videos for you name it, like from the Bay, like tons of stuff. He more recently was doing stuff with like Suicide Boys and Ghost Maine photo and video stuff. But back then he was kind of like still just an underground dude in the scene shooting videos for a bunch of people. Peep wanted to shoot a video for Cry Alone that night. And when we got to the hotel, he like mentioned, he's like, I'm going to shoot a music video. I was like, bro, it's 2 a.m. I'm going to bed. Like, good luck with your video. I fell asleep. They were shooting the video. I think they were like going outside, and like he needed a hoodie. And Juan Carlos played, he didn't play in Locke. No, Sam's in Locke. He's just friends with Locke. And he had the hoodie, and he's like, oh, you can use my hoodie. So he like wore the hoodie while they're like taking photos, and I think he wore it in the video. He's like wearing it in the video. And it was mad funny because like fan pages will post it, and like everyone's like, what is Locke? And like they'll see, like I've even seen like the steal, you know, his look, like where they like break down where each the pants come from and how much it costs and the shoes. And they do it with that picture, and it's like Locke hoodie, $40 or whatever. but it was Juan Carlos's hoodie. And all these punk dudes were just like my homies are all in Locke. I remember like showing it to them, I'm like, yo, my homie's wearing your hoodie. And they're like, what the fuck? This guy's got like, who is this or whatever? But I think it was funny. But it was Juan Carlos's hoodie. Like it was just
Juan
like
Juan Carlos from Impalers.
Yeah.
So this is also not that great. Little Peep said, that's so fucking awesome.
Yeah. So that was his hoodie. And it was funny because like, I remember like, I think I tagged like Chris Kurt in like one of the pictures, like some of the other guys. And I was just like, check this out. And they're like, what? That's random. But okay.
He still gets emails about people hitting him up like to make more hoodies.
Dude, that's so funny. I mean, that's Peep's influence, bro. He changed the world, and he made anything he touched was just instantly cool. Like, I mean, it was just like that was his influence on these kids. Like, if he did it, they want it. Like, they want to be like him. I can't tell you how many kids exist in this world that I've seen and I've met that had the exact same face tattoos and dress like him. It's creepy. There's a kid in Phoenix, and when I toured with Peep, he came to the show, and like the videographer brought the kid backstage. He had almost every same face tattoo as Peep. And the one, he was like, oh, but I still got to get this one you just got. Like, he was telling Peep, he's like, I still got to go get the anarchy sign you got.
As he's looking at him.
Yeah, and Peep was, you know, he was kind of like, this is odd. But he was also like, damn, like, that's a real fan. Like, I can't hate on it. But it's also a little odd that, you know, want to be a carbon copy. But then after Peep died, like, I've seen that kid in Phoenix at other shows. Like, I was on tour with, like, a Ghost Maine. I remember seeing that kid and, like, just, like, I was just like, like, it was, like, hard for me to see him because he has all the same – he looks like Peep. And he has all the same tattoos as Peep, but it's not Peep. So it's very – it's, like, very weird to me. But it's also, like, I don't know. It's, like, I guess you could say it's, like, a true –
he literally lives on in a way.
Yeah. I mean, he's never – I mean, his influence will always be here. Like
– oh, yeah. Like, there's one thing in music being talked about, being all this. But now, like, someone's literally dressed that – like, the tattoo has – wow.
Yeah, to the T. But I mean, I work with Ghost Maine too, and there's kids. I've met kids in Europe that have the same face tattoos. They want to be.
Does he have a lot?
Who, Ghost Maine?
Yeah,
he's huge.
I haven't seen him recently.
Yeah, he's a face tattoos.
Yeah, I mean, Lil Peep is another thing. Like, yeah. Ghost Maine, I mean, I
Ghost Maine's got the forehead. He's got the eye. He's got one under his eye. He's got one on the side of his face. And he just got another one when I was on tour with him on Gray Day. You think he got his face tattooed again? He got his girl, his baby's name or his girl's name on his face. But my man's got face tattoos. Okay. Yeah,
I don't remember. I haven't.
Rule of thumb: if it's got a face tattoo from SoundCloud, I probably worked with them in some capacity.
So sick.
Yeah.
Wow. Is there any moment that you almost that you you don't have to name the specific person or anything or the situation, be specific on it? Is there any moment working with any artist that kind of was like, man, like this is like I'm making this happen, I'm doing with this big artist, big bands, but like, oh man, like you saw something that kind of threw you off, like I don't even know if I really want to do this, like just seeing industry stuff.
I mean, of course, I think so. I think there's like there's definitely things that I've seen that make me be like, well, am I? Should I be involved in it? Do I want to be involved in this? But honestly, I think it's like the way I look at what I do is like, I'm still doing what I've always wanted to do. I'm still working with cool bands and artists that I like actually am a fan of first and foremost, but also like early on, like me just trying to help my friends in Iron Age, me just trying to help my friends in Power Trip find some kind of footing and some whatever success was going on a tour and coming home. Like that was good enough back then. But now I've definitely seen the ugly of it. Like you've seen how to, you know, like I think when you're on tour and you have something big happen at home where you can't be there, like someone die, a pet die, that kind of stuff makes you be like, fuck, should I be here? Like I'm 1,000 miles away from home and like I'm missing a wedding, I'm missing someone's funeral, I'm not there when something major is happening. I think that's been hard. Even like when I found out Peep died, I was on tour, and that was crazy to me to be like, why am I even on? Like every day, I was just like, every day after he died while I was on that tour, I was like, I don't even want to do this. I don't even, you know what I mean? It was a bummer, but I feel like you just got to press on. And it's like, ultimately, it's always what I wanted to do. It's where I've always felt comfortable is on the road or working with an artist in some capacity. So it feels weird to leave. I almost don't know what I do. You know, when the pandemic hit and touring wasn't a thing, I was like, what am I, do I go get a job like coding? I don't fucking know. I didn't go to college. I barely even graduated high school. Like, am I going to be able to?
What did you do?
During the pandemic, I did a lot of like cleaning house, just like getting a lot of my records old merch. I was like going, like I made, I'm not even exaggerating, I mean like 20K off like Depop, just selling medium shirts that don't fit me no more. You know what I mean? Yeah. I like did it deep because I had the time. I was like, damn, I'm not on tour anymore. Let me go through all my records. And there's a lot of stuff that I don't have the sentimental hold to it, or it's a size medium and I'm a fat ass now. So I'm like, yeah, it's not.
You're not even big at all.
No. But I mean, like, I'm not going to be fit into a medium no more, you know? So I'm just like, damn, like, all right, like, maybe it's time. I've been holding on to this Righteous Jam shirt or this, like, early mental shirt. Like, I'm never going to fit in a medium. Maybe I should pass it on to someone that I actually wear it. So, like, off just cleaning house, I stayed afloat off that money for a while. I did PPP loan because, like, I actually qualified with my small business. And that helped out a tremendous amount. But I was also, like, right before COVID, I was working for a record, like a major record label, Roadrunner. And I had a lot of money coming in from that. That was, like, chill. And I was able to sit on that because I was also...
What were you doing for Roadrunner?
Doing pretty much consulting, A&R stuff. But at the same tip, like... I was having to hustle any way I could, you know, like to try to stay afloat. I did a lot of things. I came up with like, I sold a concept to a techno promoter where during the pandemic, like, you know, people wanted music, people wanted live shows. I was obviously taken away from us and that was like not something that we could really compromise on. But I sold a concept to a techno promoter here in Southern California where like we partnered with the hotel. The hotel had all these balconies on one side of the hotel. Uh-huh. So we sell, instead of tickets, the ticket is your hotel room. We set up a stage in the parking lot, LED lights, projections, lasers, all the big shit you're used to with these big productions, having shows out in these parking lots and people could go on the balcony and watch and your party could be in your room, essentially isolated in this COVID. So, you know, they had all these rules about space and whatever. So this concept was like, also we brought in a chef who curated the meal that kind of was like in cahoots with the performer that made, you know, it made sense, and it like was like very much geared towards the music, and then it was paired with like maybe an alcohol pairing. It could be a package, so it was like an add-on. It was like hotel room, ticket, food, drink, and you could be in your little pod isolated. And I think people were so desperate at the time for during COVID that like this was a cool concept I came up with. I'm very proud of it, and that was what really saved me during the pandemic. But it was like, it's not a real scene. I'm that involved in the EDM scene, electronic scene, but it was like a concept I like came up with, and I was like, okay, like if I can find the right people to connect this with, like this is a cool idea. And it took off, and like we sold it. I sold the idea, and we were selling it to different promoters, like working with them in different cities. And as long as you had the, there's obviously a lot of criteria. We need a kitchen, we need a hotel, balcony, parking lot that can be turned into some kind of stage. And you know, you have to elevate this stage much higher than what you're probably used to a stage being. I'm talking 30, 40, 50 feet off the ground, off scaffolding and stuff. And like, there's a lot of overhead costs, but people were so hungry for it during COVID. Like every time we do it, it would sell out over and over and over again. And it was killing it. And we took it to a nationwide level. And that was really interesting. But obviously the time was very limited that we could, and I was very glad I could count on it for when I could count on it. And then when shit started letting up, that idea was instantly corny to everybody. You know, they're like, why would I do this? And I could go to an actual show. So we ran it for as long as we could, and I'm glad we did what we did with it. It was a cool idea, and it was like having to pivot. I didn't like it. I'd rather do a show in a room, in a club, where you feel and there's a vibe and energy, but that was what we were limited to, right? You know what I mean? It wasn't ideal. It was what we had to do. I wish I could have tied in more. Like, I was always trying to be like, is there a way I can get like a hardcore show like this? And it would never work. Like, you never make hardcore kids hang out on balconies away from each other. Yeah. Someone's going to jump. Like, let's be real. Someone's going to just fucking stage dive off there. But it's just, it doesn't work in that world. But for some people, it made sense. And it was cool because, like, even going to it, I was like, damn, these people are like happy. Like, this is cool. Like, you know, like right now, everything sucked. COVID, everything about COVID sucked. Touring was done. Live shows were pretty much cooked. Everyone was having to do, you know, streams and whatever. And it is what it is. But I mean, because I was in Europe when COVID struck. I was in Europe with Ghostmane 4 days into a 3-month tour. And we had to like cancel and go home, you know, and like had to pivot real quick and had to learn real quick what the next moves were. It was a difficult time having to fucking move, you know. But there's a lot of cool things that happened. Other cool marketing things. Ghostmane did a big campaign with Fender that was really sick.
Your creativity literally saved you.
I guess you could say that.
I wouldn't. I mean, even if you told me now, like, if like, hey Ricky, would you like to help? I'd be like, I don't think that's gonna work. And you made it work. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, it was time. It only worked
because even during COVID, I'm like, I'm still. It's like when you said it, I was like, oh, he said it's not gonna work. But then I was like, oh, it still worked. I'm like,
I knew I couldn't.
It's just so crazy.
I couldn't bill it and be like, hey, there's gonna be punk bands playing. But if I was like, all right, if we present it to the right scenes and the right crowds, like people are going to be into this, and
it still seems crazy, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Which is, I'm so glad we're back into venues and clubs and seeing people's faces and stuff. It was rough, but we persevered. I think the first tour, what was the first tour I did? Yeah, first tour I did after COVID was like actually back into small clubs, which was really funny because like right when COVID hit, I was on tour in Europe in like big theater arena settings. And then the first tour I did after COVID, I was like in DIY clubs again. That band Vended.
Vended.
Yeah. They're like from Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah.
And they're pretty much got like hired out to, they're young kids, they were like 17 and 18 at the time. And they were going on their first tour with this band Omerta from Texas.
Sick.
And I got hired out by like their management company. And I was like, yeah, I can teach these kids how to tour. Like they're young. And most of the, a couple of them did tour early on in their life. Their dads are in Slipknot, some of them.
Yeah.
And so like they grew up on tour buses and around the touring group. Obviously it's different when it's their tour and it's in a tiny club and stuff, but it was cool because they weren't coming in fully blind. Like they were like used to being around venues and stuff like that. So it was cool. And those kids were really cool. I did a lot of touring with them and it was like really sick. And through that, like it's how I became like, they'd always be opening for Slipknot. And I was like, damn, this is a band that was a poster on my wall. And now I'm like
on tour with them, and I know them on a first name basis and like work with them in different capacities. So that was like really cool, just like roundabout, like full circle moment for me on that front. But that was like all post pandemic. And to be honest, like I'm like feel so glad I stuck with music when I could have during the pandemic. I was like, damn, maybe I should learn how to code or something. So I'm glad I didn't like leave the industry. Like I kind of was like, maybe that's what I have to do. Because I didn't know how long we were going to be locked up or like kept from live music. Because I feel like every tour that started getting booked and reannounced was getting canceled and pushed and all this stuff. And you never knew when that light at the end of the tunnel was actually going to happen, where you're going to be out on the road again. And luckily things are chill again. Like, you know, touring internationally is a thing. It wasn't, you know, coming back and 2021, 2022, there's so many restrictions and all these. And when you tour Europe, you're going through a different country every day. Yeah. So it made it really difficult. And if you're having to fly, if someone gets sick, God forbid, it's crazy, you know? Like, yeah.
Wow. I mean, I could ask you questions forever, but I guess we're already an hour and a half. So I would like to wrap this up by saying, well, you've done a lot of cool shit.
Yeah.
Like, you're only 37, and you've done, like, I mean, like, from Shirley Mafia, Lil Peep, to, like, putting Power Trip's demo, like, which you didn't even at the time you were gonna, like, you know, that was gonna be a big, like, clearly you have an eye, and, like, and how you said about, what's his name, Juan Carlos Imperial?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you're a punk, you know what's up? Like, you just have the eye for knowing, I guess, people, like, or, like, for making friends with the right people, maybe. I don't know, that's what you say. But what's left? What more would you like to do? What,
I mean, so
you've
much.
Seen the world, you've worked, you've been around, like, I mean, we talked about earlier, like, you never were part of a band, you never, it looks like you never even had to, you know what I mean? Like, you've done what you wanted. Like, what more, well, what do you think is next?
I mean, I'm still not done. I still have a lot more stuff I want to accomplish.
But like what?
I mean, I feel like all of these acts I work with, there's so much left to do. Like, and I feel like when I tell a lot of people that I work with, like this whole game, this whole scene, this whole, the music industry, it's a marathon. Like, you're never done. Like, you can go sign a record deal. You can go have a sold out tour. You can get a platinum plaque. Okay, keep it going. What's next? Like, are you gonna, you know what I mean? So got to pace yourself, and like I feel like little by little I've hit some benchmarks that I really wanted to hit in my life. Like, I've toured every continent now, like everyone Antarctica obviously, but like I've toured every continent, I've worked with almost every genre, you know. Like, the only one I haven't got to that I want to is country, but I've done comedy, I've done metal, I've done punk, I've done pop, I've done you name it, I've done it. I want to keep it up, I want to kind of take it to different levels, but it'd be cool to be, I want to get, one of my goals has always been to get a platinum plaque. Like, gold obviously comes before the platinum. Like, you gotta do a half million, I believe, and then it's a milli. But, you know, like, I have friends in my circles that are finding their success on that level, and I think it's totally feasible for me, and especially I want it to be one of my artists to get one of that. It'd be amazing to be, I've looked actually on the RIAA site, and I do not think I've looked at the big hardcore band, I'm like, has Hatebreed got a platinum plaque or a gold plaque? And they haven't. Not yet, at least. They might. Who knows? But I'm like, damn, it'd be cool to be that band. That's like, you know, but who knows? It might be fuck being the first, even like being a band that does it would be a tremendous accomplishment. But yeah, I mean, I've definitely, now that I'm like, I just wrapped up a 3-month long arena tour, and being in arenas was like a big goal of mine at some point. And I had done a few festivals and one-offs, and like we played with Slipknot in a bunch of arenas in Europe, but it was like their tour, and like this one was very, Grey Day was very different because it was like our tour, we're very much a part of it, and playing, I'm a huge hockey and basketball fan, so like getting to play hockey and basketball arenas was sick to me, like getting to see the locker rooms and like, you know, like be, sometimes we'd be in there and the teams would still be in there, and I'd be like, whoa, this is hella cool. So that was like a big goal of mine. But like next, who knows? Like, part of me is like, I've put out records DIY myself. I've been offered imprint labels and stuff like that. I don't necessarily know if that's what I want to do for myself.
don't necessarily know if that's something I want to pursue, but it'd be cool to be able to put on, have a machine and like that, like industry machine, and like be able to help my friends out with it. But also it's like most of my friends know what they're doing and they can figure it out on their own. I definitely want to be a little, like, I'm still trying to, like, I'm young and there's even younger acts coming out. There's kids that are blowing my mind that are 16 and 17 years old, even younger, that are putting out music out of their bedroom that's, like, changing what people know. Like, you know what I mean? And just being on the forefront of it all and always trying to keep my pulse, my finger on the pulse of, like, subculture. Not necessarily a certain scene of subculture. Like, I always want to be tapped in with what are the good punk hardcore bands, but who's the next rappers that are coming up? What's the next wave? Like, what's the next genre we're about to find out about? You know what I mean? Like, SoundCloud had its moment. It's still percolating, obviously. Hyperpop came and went, I guess you could say. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe it'll come back or something like that. Yeah. But it's like these, just like staying kind of relevant would be, hopefully I can be. I don't want to be an old guy that's just like clinging. And you see a lot of that in LA, like old ass dudes coming to band shows and being like, oh, okay. And they're like finally catching on. They're like, oh, this band's new. And I'm like, this band's been around for 10 years. You're so late.
Yeah.
And it's funny because even like I work, some of the bands I work with, people will be like, what? You work with them? Okay, they're like new. We talk, like, you know, industry people, like, oh, we were talking about them up at the blah, blah, blah headquarters. And I'm like, that, you know, they're a cool new band. That's cool. And I'm like, yeah, they've been a band for 10 years. But that's fine. Like, you're catching on now, but it's better now than never, right? I don't know. It'd be cool to be able to just, like, put my friends on in any capacity, or just the people I ride for, the artists I ride for. Like, that's part of the reason I bought of a Sprinter van, was to like help anybody that I work with to get on tour. Like, that's usually the biggest, there's biggest hurdles about touring is gear and transportation. And now I have a bunch of gear in a storage space like 5 minutes from here that I can let a lot of my acts use if they need. I got this van if you need to use it and go on tour. Like, I'd like to get more vans and be, I can't tell you, unfortunately, how many people have to turn away when they hit me up for a van because I only got one. It'd be cool to have like a small fleet and be able to put people out whenever they need on the road and stuff like that. The goal, I don't know, like, just keep growing. Like, always try to be putting on for stuff I really believe in, really I feel. But also, like, helping these people, like, figure out this really confusing world of music and the industry and whatever the fuck you want to call it. Like, it's a scary, it can be a deceptive world. And I've, unfortunately, like, even some of my young, as a young dude, like, some of my friends fell for some of these tricks and bullshit and contracts these labels put in front of you. But it'd be cool to help people navigate into a good deal that really sees they can build a life on and make money off their music, because you deserve it. If your music is making money, like, you should be making the money off of it, not your label, not whatever. But a lot has to change in the music industry. It'd be cool to be in the forefront of getting the pay structure of music changed too, like, for producers, writers, all that stuff. But that's coming too. I feel like the next few years, things are going to change with how streaming is structured, how publishing is structured and stuff like that. But hopefully it can, because the music industry, music in general, is built on the backs of artists. Let's get these guys paid. You know what I mean? Let's get these guys taken care of. Let's get them the care. Like, not just the money they need to be the biggest artists in the world, but also, like, it's crazy to me. A record label will want 5-6 albums out of an artist. That could be your lifetime. You know, like, 5-6 albums could take you 15 to 20 years to put out. And when you think about it that way, they want to be your business partner, but they're not offering you even, like, health insurance for 15 or 20 years. Well, if you want me to be able to, if you want these artists to be able to go in the studio and put out the best album for you, like, I want to be able to incorporate something where, like, you get them actual care, like, care about them, so they could get therapy if they need it. They can take care of their chronic health problems that sometimes lead to the slippery slope of addiction by trying to cope with drugs yourself. You know what I mean? So it'd be really cool to be, it's always been a goal of mine. And it's like, even when I was being offered an imprint through a major label, I said, I want to be a label that can offer health insurance to my artists. The conversation fizzled right after that. They were not interested in that shit. And I'd love to find somebody that actually gives a shit and will not just put their money where their mouth is, but also like become a real partner with you in this and like take care of you in like on your business side, but on your personal side, like set you up for success. Like the basic stuff is just health, right? Get you enough money to get to your own place or whatever and take care of yourself. That's what we all want, right? But it just sucks. You see dudes who produce some of the biggest hits in the world get fucked over by contract, by slippery lawyers and slick talk. I've seen it. I've seen dudes I know. There's a song. It's 9 times platinum, and the producer got $2,000 flat off of it. And I know the guy, and it kills me. Every time this song comes on, I hear it all the time. I'm not going to say the names on here. And it's not really the artist's fault. It's behind the scenes lawyers and business people kind of
finagling. So the song is playing everywhere, and he only got $2,000.
Yeah. It's 9 times platinum. $2,000 flat. That dude should be living the lot. Like, you know what I mean? He has a kid. He should be able. He's now sorted out his business, and all his production from now on is very much sorted out, and he's good. But like at that point he wasn't, and that could have been like life changing for his child at the time. Now he's very good, and his kid lives an awesome life. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But that would have given him a huge step up in 2016, 15, or whatever when that track dropped. So. You know, that kind of stuff was like eye-opening to me.
Yeah.
And it was like a shock to see that that could happen to somebody. So now I just want to be sure like my people are taken care of.
And I guess the last question is, so you obviously you're passionate, you're a good guy. You've started off, like I said, you started off humble beginnings to now. As anyone who's listening, whatever it may be, whatever it is, whether you're planning or not, what's the best thing as an employee? As someone who's like learning to just continue in whatever job field they do, whether it's music or not,
yeah.
What thing has been your biggest trait that kind of kept you going?
What kept me going in music? I don't know, man.
Or overall, what's the best thing an employee could have to continue and grow?
I think just keep in mind that we don't know everything. It's a big, wide world. And like every deal, every contract is different, and having the wherewithal of knowing and having a good team around you to guide you. And I think that's really important, is to build a good team. Most people out the gate, I don't think you need a manager. You know what I mean? Like I tell a lot of, I've had bands come to me, Lady Birds. Hey, go to your bed. Sorry. No. Come here. I've had.
So. You've grown, I guess, organically from hardcore into like rap, into bigger rap, into, you know, now artists that like, even I'm geeked that you've done. I'm like, well, I guess to wrap this up, what's the best attributes someone could have in your field to keep growing?
I mean, I think a lot of it has to just do with a little bit of attention to detail. There's a lot of just small moving pieces, and there's like you're trying to keep this whole machine going, and you have to kind of be sure you don't let anything slip through the cracks. So it's like a lot of attention to detail. I think a lot of it's also just paying attention to like the true youth movements, like you know, I think as when you get older you think you know a lot more, but it's also like what's next and what's like the future of music, culture, art in general is always going to come from a new young youth movement. And that's punk and hardcore is a youth movement, you know? So it's like the whole basis of it. So, you know, I feel like the older dudes, you know, I'm in my late 30s, like you got to kind of step aside. I mean, obviously, like, you know, step aside and just let the youth kind of like lead the way now. I see a lot of people that like kind of build up a wall towards whatever's new, whether it be these TikTok bands or whatever that's coming up. But I mean, that's how the youth communicate with each other. It's how they're getting their message out. So you should pay attention, you know, to what's going on. Besides that, I think it's being a really good communicator is super important. I think being a good friend, first and foremost, to like, if you want to earn anybody's trust, you have to kind of like put yourself out there. And that's hard, you know, like a lot of the bands I work with, we don't get on a contract or paper for months. Because I have to really build a repertoire with you before we are
or like even at that level. And if it doesn't, if it didn't work when we're just like doing this soft test trial, like obviously I wouldn't want to force it. So I think it's just like also being vulnerable and thinking like, I don't know everything. I definitely don't, but I know people that could help me figure out some stuff. So it's either reaching out and being able to connect with the people you that can actually help you and the stuff you don't know or you're not well-versed in, but also is being able to, I think it's really important to be able to help people out and like take the time to maybe give advice or even like put somebody on to game or even refer somebody for something that's a job you could do maybe or something like that. It's like good to always be putting on for your people and writing for them and hiring them to do your art or working your crews.
Loyalty.
Yeah. I think because it goes a long way and it sounds corny, but it really does. Like I feel a lot more comfortable working with somebody that I have a background with, and it's crazy because I look at some of the teams I've built with different camps. Like if you look at the Ghost Main team, it's all like punk and hardcore kids, mainly from Texas. Yeah. It really is. Like his TM is from Texas. He used to roll with Power Trip. The drummer is Power Trip's old drummer. The DJ is a punk. He grew up as a punk in Dallas and hardcore kid. And like he's a DJ now. The bass player is like a used to play in Souvenirs, like a band from Ventura. Like, and when you look at that, you're like, damn, everyone kind of has that whole camp as like a tie back to hardcore and punk. The sound, Arthur Rizik is like his engineer and sometimes does front of house for him live. So it's like he's a huge metal guy in that scene. But it's funny that when you look at it, his team, it's like a ragtag bunch of dudes that make crazy shit happen on arena levels. But it's all like hardcore and punk dudes, you know? And it was cool because it was like a team that we were able to build just through the muscle of the people we knew through the community. So it's just like ride for those people. They'll be around. Like it's funny. I've been touring with some of these guys my whole life, it seems like. And it's cool that we still have that ability. But yeah, I think between being good at what you do, attention to detail, and like building trust and loyalty is like a big part of it. That's what I think. That was like the most important factors.
Sick. Anything else you'd like to say?
I think that's it. Shout out everybody. Shout out you. Thanks for coming in and talking to me, bro. This is crazy.
Thank you for allowing me to interview you. Yeah. Allow me to come into your home.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Thank
Let's
you.
Let's do it again.
Yeah.